Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey, Sam, we're up and running. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here. How are you doing, Don?
Good, man. Good to have you on. For those that don't know, you're with us and you're over in England, right?
That is right, yes. Started working for, with you and Sports Recruiting USA in January time. But I'm based in Nottingham, England.
Right on. Okay. So are you a Forest fan?
I am. Yeah, a little
all
bit
right.
Disappointed with how the season ended, but no, it was a good year for us.
Yeah, been a rough run.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave that at there. I'm an Arsenal fan, so we can't complain. It had a good year.
You had a great year, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's funny how it works for me. It works just like it did in college. It's like, if you win something, it lasts for about a day, and then you're thinking about next year. And I'm the same way as a Arsenal fan. I was the same way as a college coach. It doesn't last long for me. You know, people say, enjoy the victory. Nah, it doesn't work that way.
Exactly. Especially
I'm already nervous about trying to repeat next year.
Yeah, we've got the World Cup this summer though, so I suppose that's a bit of a difference for England and America.
Yeah. So, tell me about your journey. How'd you end up? Because you played over here in the United States, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you end up coming over?
So the first kind of way that I found out about the scholarship route and going out to America, the college system, was through my cousin. He went out to Oakland University, D1 school. He went there on a swimming scholarship and kind of just obviously I saw how good of a time he was having, how much he enjoyed the experience. And he kind of inspired me to reach out to a few different people. And then obviously I ended up connecting with Sports Recruiting USA. And that was kind of how I like entered into this space. But yeah, I think my inspiration probably came from my cousin, but obviously I did a lot of research by myself when I knew that was a pathway that I might want to do. And well, it worked out pretty well, and I'm glad that I did.
Where'd you end up playing?
So I ended up going to a small D2 school in West Virginia called West Virginia Wesleyan. I was there for my freshman year and sophomore year, and then I transferred to the University of Charleston, D2, and then played my final 2 years there, but I had a absolutely unbelievable time.
Why'd you decide to transfer? Because a lot of kids these days are, I mean, transferring, there's literally thousands of kids that transfer. And I'll tell you this, I mean, back, because I coached back in the early 90s when I started coaching in college, or in the mid 90s. And the transferring wasn't a thing, really. The occasional player would transfer, but now it's quite the thing to do for kids to transfer. What went into your transfer decision?
I think it was a bit of a strange one for me because I was playing in the same conference as the University of Charleston and obviously saw how successful they were being on both in winning conference titles but also on the national stage. And I'd done quite well my first 2 years, got first and second team all conference, and felt like I could probably, like, I was able to play on that sort of stage, and wanted to prove that I could and push myself. And then obviously I entered into the transfer portal, and I think the rules kind of changed as well. You weren't allowed to transfer in conference without sitting out a year, but the rules changed, so I was able to go to the University of Charleston and got to a national championship final. Unfortunately, not winning, but yeah, it was an unbelievable experience. I'm glad that I did transfer, but I can understand how nowadays a lot of people probably choose to transfer when it's not the right time and don't fully think through the whole process.
No, I go, I there's you say there's I think there's two sides to it, I was gonna say, but there's really three or four different sides to it. And there's the coach recruited me, but now coach doesn't want me and has told me it's best for me to leave kids. There's that. Then there's the I've done very, very well, and I understand that there's better environments, and we say the grass isn't always greener on the other side, but that word always is thrown in that saying because sometimes it is greener on the other side. Sometimes it's better facilities or a better team or a more competitive team, or I coach goalkeepers for years. Sometimes it's there's no goalkeeper coach, right? And this other school has one, and they're recruiting, so. There's that. And then there's the moving up. We do get kids. I've got a number of clients that moved from D2, did really, really well, and now they're playing D1 and doing well. And they moved up. And then there's the, and this is the one that drives me crazy societally, Sam, because I just don't know that it's good for our society. I went and I tried for 6 months and coach doesn't like me. It's coach's fault. I'm never going to get an opportunity here. I didn't succeed immediately, so I want to transfer. It's the things didn't go right, and so I'm running away, going to go try somewhere else type of mentality. And look, sometimes, and I think if kids admit it to themselves, sometimes it's, oh shoot, I'm in over my head. This team is too good for my level. I need to move down. That I understand. If truly it's like I will never, I could train every day of my life and lift every day of my life, and I'm just not at the athletic level that these players are. Okay, I get that. But some of these kids are running away from just the first sign of adversity, right? And I'm not sure that that's healthy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is difficult. Obviously, everyone wants to play. That's the biggest thing. You don't go to college not to play in pretty much everyone's case. But I think you have to give yourself enough time to adapt, especially at the start. And then once you are adapted, the likelihood is that you will get an opportunity at some point if you put in the hard work. College is built that way. Obviously, you've been a coach and a player, and I've been a player, and I know that everyone at some point gets an opportunity, and then ultimately it's down to you whether you can take that opportunity. But I think, as you said, there's lots of different scenarios, but I do agree with you that the people that go in and automatically want to transfer, it's not a great look for yourself, in my opinion, especially when the coach has probably put a lot of belief and trust in you by bringing you in the first place.
Yeah, and I think I want for the kids and parents listening to this, I want to just have them think about and remind them that life is difficult. It's full of difficulties. Things rarely go perfectly. This is not a Disney movie, where everything works out at the end. And I think having to go through adversity is good for all of us. I think that's where we grow. And I also know from my experience, look, you kind of at least know where you're at with your current team, and you kind of know where the coach is, and you kind of know your teammates. When you leave and find a new team, you're at the bottom of the ladder again. Maybe you've climbed three or four rungs of the ladder and you look up and see how high the ladder is. You get scared and you climb back down, but you're going to be at the bottom of the ladder with the next school again. And just to reiterate, unless you can find a level that Maybe it's the worst junior college in Alaska that can barely field a team, and you'll be a big fish in a small pond. Okay, if that's what you want, okay. There are those schools out there, but if you want to, if you're D2 and you want to stay at the D2 level, and or you're D1 and you want to stay at the D1 level, you got your foot in the door. What are you doing chasing and going off to another one? But it doesn't sound like that was your situation.
No, I didn't feel like it was. I think I wouldn't say that I have any regrets because I don't, but I think I would have potentially liked to have been able to challenge myself at the D1 level. I do believe that I was good enough, but unfortunately, the right opportunity just didn't come up, and I was fortunate enough to go to a top five D2 program in Charleston, and I think by being there, there's similarities between them and other top even Division One programs, just how well and professionally that the environments ran, and so have you. So I feel like I kind of got a D1 feel without actually going Division One. But no, I think in my scenario, it was probably the best option. The coach actually of West Virginia Wesleyan also left at the same time that I did, so it made the transition a little bit easier for me to be able to leave, which I think helped, but yeah, I feel like it was definitely the right decision for myself.
Yeah, no, I don't know how much of the country understands how good Charleston men's soccer is, but I would say that's they could probably beat at minimum regularly. They could probably beat almost half of the D1 schools in the country fairly regularly. A very
Yeah.
good side.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, I think. Just having played with, Division One players from some top programs in the Summer League as well, USL 2 and NPSL, from the experiences I had, I know that we definitely could have easily competed. Whether we would have won, obviously, is a different story, but I think there's definitely some clear comparisons.
Let's since we're talking about Charleston, let's just address the elephant in the room. I don't know how much time you spend on social media. I spend a lot of time on social media, and the American parents are very upset about the Charlestons and the Marshalls, the
Yeah.
Vermonts, with it's like, look, my kid went to MLS next and played at a decent level, and we put a lot of money into this, and the spots are being taken up by guys like you, internationals coming over, and it doesn't leave much of an opportunity for the American player. I don't know what are, obviously you've got a very different perspective on this, and I think I have a different perspective than the average American, and having a son that went through this and played with the internationals. And I know what it did for him, but I can also understand how the American parent feels about this. Do you have any thoughts at all on this?
Yeah, I do. I think it is such a difficult one because obviously the opportunity that I've been given, like, I'm so grateful for, and I don't underestimate it in terms of, I can imagine that it can be frustrating for a lot of players, but there also is American players that were on my team as well. I've played with American players that have come through kind of MLS Next and so have you. I think the biggest thing it comes down to is that if I was an American parent, I would be annoyed, but I don't think I would be annoyed at the players. I would be more annoyed towards the coaching staff or the people that are kind of building these teams, because at the end of the day, it's not their fault. It's not a player's fault if they're given an opportunity. It's more, I think I would put more blame towards the coaching staff. But at the same time, I can understand it from their point of view because they want, especially at Charleston, we had older players, 20, 22-year-old guys that have played in top divisions that are ready to go and win now. And ultimately, college is a win now environment. You need to win now. You can't wait and develop. So in their opinion, if they've got a 22-year-old that is more advanced or further along in his development, 9 times out of 10 they would probably choose that guy. And I also can't blame the coaches for that. So it is a really tricky one, but I do empathize with them because it must be frustrating, especially if you're putting a lot of money towards it with the idea of your son or daughter going to college. I can definitely see both sides.
Yeah, you said something interesting there, and this is where I always come back to, and this is me as a coach thinking and having been in these shoes, because I've had, I had a junior college team that was ranked as high as number two in the country, and we were rocking and rolling, and we had, only one or two Americans that were on the field, really helping us at a time when we were really rocking. Actually, when we probably had four, when we were number two in the country, and those four kids stepped up. I mean, they improved. They did what they needed to do to compete. And so it's not like it's impossible for an American to step up. And those players got better, and those players then went on to higher levels than they would have had they not been pushed daily and challenged by the internationals that we had brought in. And it helped not only elevate the individual American players, but it helped elevate the team. And then thirdly, it introduced all of us to different cultures from around the world: Australians, Norwegians, Englishmen, Welsh, Irishmen, Scotsmen, Mexicans, South Americans, Argentinians, and then mix that with the Americans, and it meant, nobody was comfortable in their own environment. Everybody had to reach inside of themselves and find a way to be more open and to learn about different cultures. And my American kids are drinking mate from the Argentinians, and everybody's learning about something new, and it bonded us as a team, and it elevated the football, the soccer, and it elevated the individual play of the Americans as well as everybody else. And I don't see how that generally was a bad thing for soccer in this country.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from personal experience in terms of being at when I was at West Virginia Wesleyan. There was a lot of there was more Americans definitely, but we did have a core kind of group of Europeans. So we had about five English and probably three Scottish. And then when I went to Charleston, it was just there was guys from all over the world there. Genuinely, there was guys from Kenya, guys from Argentina, South America, Brazil, all over. So it was honestly crazy. And I think I learned a lot being able to have a conversation with someone from Kenya, have a conversation with someone from Brazil, Argentina, just made me probably a better person in general, just from being able to do that. And the experience of being able to do that is invaluable. So yeah, I do think I can understand it. But I think that if you're an American kid going into that environment, it's going to benefit you greatly. For example, there's one guy that I talk about quite a lot when I'm doing recruiting work, and that's a guy called Tristan Rose. He started in Charleston's development team, a kid from Ohio, so not too far from West Virginia. Came in, didn't play much his first 2 years, probably in the first team. Broke through into the first team, became All-American, went on to play for Maryland in the Big Ten, and then now playing pro, so in America. So like I think that he would say that if he hadn't have been in that environment with foreign players, with the experience he's had, I don't think he would be playing pro right now, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I do think it's It does. Because there's two ways to do it, you know. I mean, I interviewed Jamie Clark at University of Washington with virtually no internationals. Got one international, and all Americans on the team, and they're winning Division One national championship. And then, you know, the year before it was Vermont with almost all internationals, and then, you know, so it does go. There is two ways to do it, and what other parents and players also have to understand. I think West Virginia is a good example, and no knock on West Virginia, but you know, when I ask players about where they want to go to school, West Virginia is not top of the list. It's not even middle of the list. It's not even on the list. You know, they want New York, they want Florida, they want California, they want, you know, they want the bigger states, they want the bigger schools, they want the bigger names, you know, the Indianas and the Notre Dames and the, you know, they want the bigger names and the bigger schools in, and they want the schools they've heard of. How many people even know where West Virginia Wesleyan is or what it is or what division it is? And one of the reasons why some of these coaches across the country recruit internationals is because Americans know where West Virginia is and they're not interested. And as an Englishman, you have no idea what you're walking into. And
Less idea.
you don't care, right? I don't want to
No.
put words in your mouth, but what do you think about that?
I think you're totally right. I think the way I think about it sometimes is because the American recruiting cycle starts earlier in terms of you want to go to college, right? You're in high school, you might start thinking sophomore, maybe even before that, where you want to go, and then junior year you're really pushing, emailing coaches, talking to coaches. In my opinion, I think Americans have more options in terms of where they potentially might want to play. So it's kind of more difficult to make a decision sometimes. Whereas I feel like being an international, sometimes you might get one opportunity or one team say, hey, we want you. So you don't really have not the luxury, but you don't have the pressure of making a decision. For example, when I came out to the States, I think I had two teams that were or two universities that were interested in me, and I had to make a decision out of the two. Whereas if you're an American that has maybe talking to five, six, seven schools, the pressure of making that decision is harder. Where I feel like it was easy for me. It was, there's your two options. Which one do you prefer? Kind of the on your way type of thing. And I think that sometimes helps.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I do. When you came over, were there any besides the cultural, obviously, anytime you move to another country, there's some cultural shocks. But what about on the footballing side? Were there any things that you would advise an incoming freshman, whether foreign or domestic? Were there any things that you would you wish somebody had told you that you would advise to incoming freshmen?
Just be as fit as you can, I think, is the biggest thing I could say. Like I thought I was in pretty good shape. I thought I was fit. I could run, but the first 2 weeks of that preseason were something that I hadn't experienced before. The heat as well, obviously, was different. Something I had to get used to depending on where you go in America. But yeah, I think any advice would be open-minded to what you're about to experience, but also put yourself in the best physical condition that you can be, because you can go from being maybe a guy that the coach thinks won't play many minutes to being an impact player pretty quickly within that preseason. So I think if I'm an incoming freshman, just put yourself in the best position possible, and that comes through being in the best physical shape and probably mental shape that you can be.
So, like, what would you specifically, what types of things would you have been doing had you known what kind of shape. Because when we say, "Hell, be in the best shape you can be," well, like you said, a player can go out and do things and think that they're in good shape and think that they're ready to go, but they're not. So, what specific things would you recommend to incoming freshmen that they do that you notice that maybe players don't do?
Yeah, so I think something I wish I would have done was done a little bit of research or spoken to my coach and been like, what's the, for example, what's the fitness test going to be? Or look
Oh,
online.
so your coach didn't
No.
give you like a summer fitness packet with what the tests were going to be? They didn't tell you that?
We had a packet, but it wasn't kind of specific to the test. So, for example, when I went to Charleston, it was a little bit different. We knew every single, I knew what the fitness test was going to be 2, 3 months out, and I had time to kind of do it 5, 6, 7, 8 times. I can't remember how many times I did it because I needed to do it to be able to pass it because it was a grueling test. But I think the biggest advice would be, yeah, it is tough, but I think just speak to your coaches. Nowadays, you'll get sent packets. And just make sure that you're doing them, and maybe try and speak to other players that are in college, even on your team. Reach out to them and say, "Have you got, usually you get paired up with someone you can message on WhatsApp when you're joining the new, the university." I think speak to them, ask them if they've got any advice, any pointers, because obviously they've already been through it, and probably have a better idea of what's coming.
So just for those of you listening that don't maybe haven't committed to a school yet, typically you get a fitness packet that's it'll give you like things to do every day for 10 weeks, leading into the season, something like that. Run on this, sprints on this day, long, slow distance runs on this day. Sometimes they'll have, the packet that we give out that we recommend to our clients at SRUSA that we give out has, strengthening in there, things that you can do without weights, different strengthening exercises, different runs. It's a sample college fitness packet that we used in college, and then it's got, 10 different sample fitness tests from the beep test to the Man United to the 120s, L runs. It's got all kinds of different tests on there that some colleges use. The Cooper Fitness test, some colleges use the 2 mile run as their fitness test. Some do. And then others don't. And it's I think players need to be prepared for all of it if they don't know what the tests are. And it can be hard for players, Sam.
Yeah, definitely. I think that hear me? Sorry. All good.
All right. All right, had a little technical glitch there, but we're back. We were talking about, advice that you would give players, and you were talking about fitness, but you were talking about also mentally. What do you mean by mental preparation?
It's difficult going into any new environment in terms of it's easy. Well, my freshman year compared to my sophomore year, I found my sophomore year so easy just because I already had friends. I knew what to expect off the field. Accommodation, sleeping arrangements, everything like that was already. I already knew what I was walking into. Whereas in that first couple weeks, it's difficult. Making new friends is hard, especially if you're an American, walking in with internationals, the language barrier could be difficult. So I think just understand that the first couple of weeks is probably going to be difficult. But as we said earlier in the podcast, I think that's life. So just be prepared to be challenged and kind of welcome that.
Is there any like any specifics that you can think of that you would things that you would have done going into it now that you look back?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I would have done was reach out and try and almost make friends beforehand, if that was possible, if that's
I think
possible.
that's great advice.
You know, maybe make friends with the guys that are also in your recruiting class. There'd probably be a small group of you, maybe a bigger one, depending on how many guys are coming in. But I think if I'd have done that before, the start bit would have definitely been easier, even if it's just a couple conversations. You know, when you get on that first day and you meet everybody, it's easier if you know somebody. That's just a fact, really.
I think that's good advice. I mean, it's not that hard today to form a WhatsApp group
Yeah, exactly.
and to ask the coach, hey, any phone numbers of any upcoming freshmen? And
Yeah.
that's leadership, right? That's also leadership. And I think that players listening to this can understand and appreciate that if they ever thought about I want to be the leader, I want to be a leader eventually with on my team, and I want to, whether it's captain or just being a leader, that's something that they is in their control that they can do that's not very hard to do. Ask coach for phone numbers and names and start a WhatsApp group and, lead the conversations, things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's not,
Yeah.
like I said, it's not difficult to do that.
No,
No,
I
it
think
is.
that's good advice. That's good advice. So tell me about your role with SRUSA and how you decided to get involved in the helping kids with college placement space.
So I graduated in December, and then I kind of s knew I would be coming back home because I wanted to continue playing myself, and I still am. But I spoke to Chris, and he Chris Cousins, and he felt that there was an opportunity there for me to kind of come on board and help. And I've at the start, the first few months so far, it's been almost shadowing Chris and kind of understanding what goes into it, because being a player, I didn't understand fully, kind of the back part of this job and what it takes and what you have to do. So I started doing that for the first kind of few months, and now I've started working more with individual clients and more with clients with Chris, specifically, and Danny Riley, other members, just kind of offering my support, helping people. And yeah, to be honest, I've really enjoyed it. I think it's taught me a lot. There's been a few challenges already, but really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, all of our staff is either college coach, college player, most both, but at least a college player. We truly understand the landscape. It's not just, hey, I'm a dad. I put my kid through it, and now I
Yeah.
understand it. And I've never been a player or a coach. It's very hard to step into this space. But I think having been through it as a player gives you a good perspective to be able to it's some of give players some of the advice that we've been talking about and be able to guide them through the process for sure.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I've learned, honestly, and kind of understand now is any and my advice to any player that's going into college or wants to play in college is just like get into the system. It doesn't necessarily matter where you get in, just get into the system. Sometimes I've had conversations with people where they think they're already proven or they should be playing at a higher level than they are, or they can do all the offers that are coming in. And the conversation we have is sometimes you can be proven outside of college, but you aren't proven in college. And that's the biggest thing that I try and help families understand and players understand is it doesn't matter what you've done when you get there. Like you're starting from afresh. And that can be a good or a bad thing, because some people might have had amazing careers up until the college point, or they may have struggled. But as soon as you get on that first sort of day, it's a fresh start. And if you perform well and you prove yourself, then you can pretty much go anywhere in the college space now. Go from JUCO to top of Division One, NIA, D2, NIA to D1, it doesn't matter. Just get in the building.
Yeah, that I think that's part of it, getting your foot in the door and then proving yourself at whatever level you're at. I think the other thing that it's so hard for parents and players to understand is, you know, most players that are talking about going into college are in their community, you know, they're the big fish in a small pond. You know, but when you get into college, you're literally dealing with players from all over the world and of all different ages. And for at least for the American player, look, it's the, they're playing most of these players are playing with their age group. And in England and in most countries, most kids are playing in their age groups, although more often, not more often, but quite often overseas, players are playing with older players. But they're older players from a small, still from their area, you know? So they aren't seeing the big picture of what it looks like with better players from all over the world. And college is still being used as a pro training ground. I mean, there are still professionals coming out of the college ranks that weren't ready to play professionally when they came into college, and when they leave, they are ready and they are succeeding at the professional ranks. So it's still a really big pond. It's a lot bigger than the small pond they were in back home, and players don't often understand that.
No, I totally agree. I think, especially with the way that college soccer is going now, I think more pros are going to start coming out of it. I genuinely believe that, and I don't think that those pros will necessarily all be going into American leagues either. I think Europe will start using the kind of college soccer space way more. I think there'll be scouts and stuff looking at that a lot more, because the age range typically of 18 to 22, you're still classed as a younger player. I've come back to the UK now and I'm still classed as a young player. I'm not classed as, really experienced. So I think it gives you the time to try and jump to the next level if that's what you want to do, because not everybody does want to go pro. Some people, want to have a good college career and then get a job or start the next chapter.
Yeah, no, you made a really good point. Look, even in the pro level, 20, 21, 22 is still classed as a young player. And it's very rare that you see an 18-year-old making it professionally or a 19-year-old making it professionally, because that one of the arguments out there for players that are very good is, why don't you just skip college and go directly pro? Why would you even mess with the college game? And my answer is, you think it's that easy. It's not that easy. There aren't that many 18-year-olds just, oh, I'm a pro. You know, I'm 18 years old, I'm playing for Arsenal. It's like, excuse me, how many times in the history of any big club, do you see that happening? It's headline news. It's so rare. You know, Arsenal's got a 16-year-old now, but it's not like he's a regular starter, you know? And it's like, well, he's playing for the first team. Yes, he is. And how many do you see doing that? It's rare. And even in MLS, it's rare. It's very rare. I think one of the most important things for any young player is to be in an environment. If you have dreams of playing beyond college, be in an environment that you're playing. You know, sitting on the bench, Sure, there's a value to being in training. There's a value to it, but it's not the same as playing in games. And your development as a player is going to be stagnated if you're not playing games regularly. If you're not playing for the first team regularly, find an environment that you can do that you can grow and develop as a player. And to go back to the fish in the pond analogy, if you become and grow into a big fish in a small pond, you can always be transferred into another pond that's bigger. So you can be challenged more and then grow more. Fish tend to grow to the size of their environment. If you take those big giant koi fish in a koi pond, if it's just a little container, that fish won't grow anymore.
Yeah.
And if you put them into a bigger environment, they grow bigger and stronger. And I think that's important to think about as a player.
Definitely. Yeah, I think, especially, I think a lot of, well, the biggest thing for me was, this is as an international, not as an American. I think I couldn't stay in a full-time environment, which is another thing why I think the scholarship route and the college soccer route is such a big is so big with internationals, is because you get to a point in Europe or in South America or wherever you are where it becomes near impossible to stay full time without being a full time professional. You have to get a job, or you have to do, so you become part time. Whereas in America, it is full time, as you say, it's, training in gym every day or near enough every day. And I think that's one of the biggest pulls for internationals coming to America, is that they get to stay in full-time soccer.
Well, yeah, okay. So there is this growing, it's small, but it's this growing trend of Americans going, "Hey, I'll go to I hear there's a college team in England, right? That my kid can go to college in England and play there. They have a college league, right? They have a team. So what's the difference between that and what's going on in America?"
The difference is that may be full time, but that predominantly is from ages 18 to 20. And then after that, I personally don't know of a kind of program that allows you to keep playing beyond that. So I do believe that coming over to the UK as an American is potentially a great option, especially if you feel like you're either not ready for college just yet, or whether you feel like you want to experience something new, or you want to develop, or even you just want to just try your luck in England, so to speak. I think that's a great option. But I do believe that you can't replace college soccer with UK college. It's just not, it like long term, it's not the same. I think it should be used as a almost a training camp, or like a pre-college experience. I think that's the best way to use it. You can't replace one with the other, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for Americans, they don't think the level's the same. I mean, because in England, you have so many different levels, and
Yeah.
for the most part, if you had to draw continue the English pyramid, the university soccer system would be at the very bottom of the pyramid. It's pretty bad.
In terms of the college system as a whole, yeah. But I do believe that the top levels in the college system, whether that's the top kind of 50 D1 and some teams potentially in D2, could definitely
I
compete
mean, I meant
as.
the you know, I'm sorry. I meant the English universities.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, that level is extremely low
That's what I
compared
was
to,
talking about. The
yeah,
sorry,
sorry.
the English universities. It's
Compared
bad. It's
to,
really bad.
yeah, it is pretty bad. And that's, yeah, a lot of American college teams, the predominantly most of them would be English teams. in my
Yeah,
opinion.
no, it's wild when some of the American university teams, college teams, go over to England for spring or for preseason and they play against professional teams, quite often they get results.
Yeah, I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to go on a pre-season training camp only last July, with the University of Charleston. We played Tottenham Hotspur, Everton, and Burnley.
Were you playing the first teams or
We
were
were
you playing
playing the
reserves?
U21s, yeah, so the reserves.
U21s, okay.
Yeah. And we lost 3-2 to Everton, drew 0-0 with Tottenham, and then drew 2-2 with Burnley. So
And
not
under
very good.
21 is true pro path players at that point, because those are players that have contracts. After 18, you can't be an amateur anymore, right? You have to be on the pro path,
Yeah,
right?
they're full-time professionals on
Right.
most of them will be on good money, like not kind of apprentice wages, more proper contracts, proper money. So obviously the level is extremely high, and it was challenging, but we did really well.
Yeah, so that just gives, and so that gives the American public a little better perspective when people say, oh, college soccer is pure rubbish. Why would people do it? Just go pro. And there's Americans out there that say this, just go pro. Don't waste your time in college. It's a ma massive waste of time. This is a Division II men's team from America going over and competing against full-time professionals in England. And big teams,
Yeah,
not fifth division sides.
no, massive teams. Yeah, some top players. I even think that there was two players that we played against for Tottenham that may were either in the squad of a Premier League game or came on. I'd have to fact check that, but I think there was definitely two players that were in the match day squad for a Premier League game that we played against.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. No, that's pretty incredible. And not those that's not a one-off either. I mean, we've every year you hear about American teams going, college teams going over there and playing against name brand you would know the name of if you pay attention to English football at all. You would know the name of teams and getting results, sometimes wins. Oh, it's just preseason. Oh, it's just nobody's taking it seriously. No, they're taking it, everybody at the professional level, and certainly at the college teams, are taking every minute on the field seriously. It's not like anybody takes pride in losing a match. Everybody's trying.
Yeah, no, especially playing against the teams like we talked about before. They don't believe in taking things easy, that's for sure. Teams like Tottenham, even though they didn't have a great year, their kind of environments are relentless. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't agree with a comment like that.
Yeah, no, it's just not true. Just not true at all. It's great. Well, Sam, anything else that you want to leave us with? Any other thoughts? Players that from overseas that are listening to this, how do they get a hold of you?
So you can either get a hold of me through the website sportsrecruitingusa.com or my personal email, which I'm sure we can put on this post on this podcast when we put it out. But yeah, there's various different ways.
Yeah, we'll have your links and your email address and all of that in the podcast. And are you on social media at all?
Yes, I do. I have an Instagram as well, so we'll put that down. I'm also on LinkedIn, so if anyone has any questions, just about anything, even if it's about the college stuff in England, feel free to message me.
All right, Sam. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and I'll I'll see you soon. We'll talk again real soon. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Don.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.